lurking. He's watching. He's waiting. Welcome to Fatal Flower Presents.
Oh, hello. It's me, Fatal Follower, and I am back with a new episode because you have been playing with Ouija boards and you have conjured me back after a long month off. What did I do in that month? Well, I watched a lot of horror and read a little bit of horror. So, pretty good stuff. Maybe not so much the best of the year, but I did watch some interesting things. Up first, I wanted to promote a film from Saban Films, The Flood, directed by Brandon Slagle. It is written by Chad Law, Josh Ridgway, and it stars Casper Van Dien, Louis Mandalore, and Nikki Whelan. It's in theaters and on demand and digital on July 14th. So, what is it about? Well, do you like killer alligator movies? Because then maybe you won't even need to hear the synopsis. But it is, after a massive hurricane floods Louisiana, it unleashes a threat even deadlier than the rising water level, a relentless horde of giant hungry alligators. When a group of in-transit prisoners and their security guards seek shelter in a local prison, they become prey for the flesh-eating attackers. To survive, the prisoners and guards must fight together in this action thriller packed with slithery scares and jaw-clenching suspense that is called The Flood. Danger is rising. I've always been a little creeped out by alligators. I lived in Florida briefly, and when I arrived in the plane and I met with my old school friend Ron, he told me, be careful walking out in the daytime, in the night. We're in gator country now. And I never actually was attacked by one, but I was always on the lookout. And you should always be on the lookout for killer alligators as well. This movie, I did get to check out an advanced screening of this. And I think it kind of scratched the itch that I was looking for. If I was looking for a big sort of production, sci-fi animal attacks horror movie. I know these type of movies, they fall into different categories. You have a movie like Crawl, which came out a couple years ago. Huge fan of that movie. I loved the way the alligators were featured in the movie. A lot of it was obviously underwater, but when you do get to see them, you do get that practical CGI combo that works because it is a big budget, you know, mainstream horror movie. With this one, you can tell that there is some low budget CGI happening, and I think it's charming, to be honest. So if you're looking for that sort of cheese factor, action survival thriller, I think you'll get some joy out of this. But I recommend you checking it out when you are wanting that animal attacks creature feature in your life. So June saw the release of quite a few theatrical movies, so I wanted to highlight some of those first. One that I quite enjoyed was called The Blackening, and I wasn't really sure if I was going to be in it because, to be honest, I wasn't, and I haven't seen them yet, but I can tell by the comedy that, like, the Madea Boo movies or, you know, that style of comedy, it just doesn't really appeal to me when it comes to horror comedies. That plays it more of, like, just comedy with those horror elements sort of thrown in as a parody or satire. The Blackening sort of plays it more straight up, though, which I enjoyed. It's about old friends that reunite for a weekend getaway only to find themselves trapped in a cabin with a killer. It released actually June 16th, so you can still check this out in theaters, and it is actually available now to rent on Vudu. It is directed by Tim Story. Tim Story did movies that are comedy based, like Barbershop, or he actually did the two Fantastic Four movies for Marvel when they were with Fox back in the day. And so here he got back to his comedic roots and he put a little horror twist on this. And I would say that for this movie particularly, it is playing into the comedic aspects of the tagline, like, we can't all die first, meaning synonymously, Black people in horror movies are often the ones that are picked off first or killed first. And so here, because the group is all Black, who's going to die first? Well, that kind of plays into the plot and the motivations of the killer. And I found this movie pretty clever, and it was very funny, and it had some thrilling moments. Is it scary? Well, again, I don't get scared of very many movies that I watch. I'm in it for the story and the horror part, and the horror to me doesn't necessarily always scare me, but it does entertain me. So I'm not looking to be scared with this movie, but I am looking for some fun, and I had a lot of fun with this. There was a lot of moments that were laugh out loud. I really dug the whole idea of the Blackening, the board game that the group plays, and I thought it was a clever twist on the lawn jockey, which if you don't know what the lawn jockey is, it is sort of a racist figure that people, and I honestly have still seen this up in New York. People still have these out in their lawns. It is a blackface lawn jockey. And in this, the blackface character is the killer is wearing that mask. And so it looked interesting, and it was kind of cool to see that play on that style of character in a movie, and that being the villain of this group. And so it was cool. I dug it. Definitely would recommend it. I think out of 10, I would give this a solid 8 out of 10. Highly rewatchable. I'm definitely picking this up when it comes out. So I think you should check it out as well if you're looking for that horror comedy with a little more comedy intertwined with some thriller slashery kind of moments. I think you'll dig it, and I am anxious to rewatch it again. Now, the big movie for me that I was highly anticipating for the summer was The Boogeyman. Now, this time last year, we were graced with The Black Phone from Joe Hill, which is obviously Stephen King's son. And this year, Stephen King, you know, was adapted to a big mainstream horror movie called The Boogeyman. What's it about? Well, it's about a family that encounters a terrifying supernatural entity that feeds on the suffering of its victims. This is directed by Rob Savage. He brought us the very big COVID movie, which I think there's two big COVID movies. There's Host, which plays on that laptop, desktop horror, not necessarily found footage, but streaming style of horror. I've gone back and forth with how I appreciate Host. And I think in the end, I do like it. I ended up picking it up. I appreciate the creature in it and the practicality of it. And I appreciate the story. And it does play on that time capsule of 2020 very much. And Rob Savage, also did Dashboard, which I recently watched. And it is on Hulu to stream. And I don't know if it was quite my cup of tea. And mainly, this movie is famous for using that right-wing personality, that anti-masker MAGA person. They are the center of this, and they are tortured through this movie. And not to say that I want to watch that or don't want to watch that, because there was some fun moments where I'm like, okay, yes, this bitch is going to get it now. She's annoying. She's getting all these people into these situations that is all her fault. And she's a hyper annoying right-wing person. And while I appreciated some of the elements to Dashboard, it didn't work with me. I think the character was just so unlikable overall. And here, I think Rob Savage kind of toned down the characters and the personalities, and it played more like a Stephen King adaptation, like you would see like something from the 80s or the 90s. This was a really, really well-directed movie starring Sophie Thatcher. She and Chris Messina, of course, and Vivian Lynn Blair and David Dasmalian, who is a big name now in horror. David is going to be featured in The Last Voyage of the Demeter, which I'm highly looking forward to in August. But I have gone on a little bit of a off the road here. But The Boogeyman for me was really fun. It really worked in that style of which is popular now, that showcasing grief as a metaphor. And here, the boogeyman is sort of passed down like a curse. And it had that element almost of like Smile in it. But this story was written in the late 70s, I believe. So this sort of predates Smile. But it's not really, as far as the plot goes, not necessarily like Smile, but there is an element that people will try to compare, if you will. But this movie, it worked for me. It was cool. The lighting was a big factor in how you were going to juxtaposition light and dark in scenes and how the boogeyman would be portrayed. And yes, it is practical and there are some CGI elements to it, but it is a guy in a suit and I appreciate that. And it worked for me. It was cool. I've actually already gotten to rewatch it and I dug it even more the second time around. I would say out of 10, it was after leaving the theater, it was like a 7.5, but I think it's creeped up to about an 8 out of 10 for me. Really, really good, really good, good mainstream horror feature for Rob Savage, and very dark for a PG-13 movie. There is a scene at the beginning that I'm quite surprised past due to the content of what was happening. It was pretty dark, and it is a pretty dark movie, I have to share with you. So if you still can catch this in theaters, definitely do. And hopefully this gets a release, fingers crossed. Another one of their movies that was part of this, I guess, acquisition was Barbarian, which has not seen a physical release. So I don't know if The Boogeyman will see that physical release, but we all know out there that are movie collectors who to connect to see if they will put it out for us on physical media. And if you don't know Roy Dam on MOD Archives, check him out. All right. So I got one physical release that I got to review. It is now on Apple TV, Vudu, or iTunes to rent. I have the Blu-ray of it, and it is called The Tank. And this is a movie I've been following for quite a bit of time because it is a practical creature feature movie. I got to see some stills ahead of time of the creature, which I was pretty impressed with. And I dug this movie. It was pretty cool. This is called The Tank, directed by Scott Walker. And it is about a family accidentally unleashing an ancient, long-dormant creature of an abandoned coastal property. This was released earlier this year, April 25th, in select cinemas. But now it is available for you to stream or own. And I am glad that I picked this up and had this available on physical because this is one that I would revisit. This is set in the 70s, which I appreciated because it takes that accessibility to technology out of the equation. There is actually a point where someone has to call the police via walkie-talkie, and that was really suspenseful. I won't say that this movie is innovative in any way. If you dig movies from the 80s, 90s, there's a movie out there called The Cellar, which Vinegar Syndrome released, I think, last year. And this movie really would pair with that movie. It's very similar in there's a creature in a dungeon, in a cave, in the cellar, or wherever. And the family moves in and, you know, send in the creature for gross, bloody carnage. This movie doesn't have like a large body count, but I think it worked in some of the gore that you get to see. and the creature was super badass. I did dig it. It echoes the look of the Demogorgon in a little bit of a way, and maybe a little bit of the creatures from A Quiet Place. And I think it's because of the way that some of these creatures' mouths are portrayed. There's those, it's almost like a flowering effect that happens with the multiple mouths and rows of teeth and the innards that you get to see. So this one is a little bit more bipedal, but it's pretty cool. So I think you creature feature fans will dig this. So recommend it. I say out of 10, it's about a 7 out of 10 for me. I dug the atmosphere. I love movies that are set in, you know, abandoned coastal areas. So this was pretty vibey, very Lovecraftian in a way. So this is one that I would totally revisit. All right. So I have one that I recently checked out. It actually dropped on Tubi, and now it's a Tubi original, which is kind of odd because this movie could have potentially played well in a movie theater. I'm not sure what happened, but you can check it out for Tubi, or check it out on Tubi for free as of this recording. It is called, horrible title, just to forewarn you, it's called The Deep Web Murder Show. Hate all of that. It is about a dark web murder show. This is called The Deep Web. It's just, I don't know, it's just so clunky, and it sounds like a horrible found footage movie. And I think a lot of people will pass this up, but I think there's a little bit of fun in this. It's about a podcaster's search for clues into his sister's death, which lands him on the dark deep web, where he uncovers the murder show, a site where the highest crypto bidder selects how the victim will be killed. If you are watching them, they are watching you. This is directed by Dan Zachary, also written by him. This movie was pretty fun, actually. So it has some things going on that maybe don't work. And let me just start with that. Aiden Howard plays Ethan. He is the main character. I don't know if he had the gravitas to lead this movie. There are some emotional moments where he's supposed to cry, and it didn't really, it was a little awkward and cringy. And that's really briefly. So that's at the beginning. And for the most part, though, he plays it pretty good when he's not having to emote in that way. But this movie was sort of the cross between Saw, Hostel, and a little bit of Haunt. If you remember The Haunt that came out a couple years ago, I think it was written by Scott Beck, who also wrote, or Brian Woods, who also wrote Quiet Place. So this movie has a little bit of everything going on. I thought it was going to be found footage. It's not. There is that streamer aspect to it, obviously, because it's the murder show, the site. But there are some interesting costuming in this with the killers. They, you know, it's those clown masks, but these clown masks, they look sort of similar to like Billy the Puppet in a way. They're pretty grotesque, and I think it's a doll maker, which is one of the killers, and his mask is pretty cool. You know, it has those elements of a true crime element to the story. And then there's some slashy elements to it with the killers and watching them kill and watching them stalk their prey. And, you know, there is some cheesy elements to it. So I think overall it kind of entertained me in a way. And this is one that I actually requested to get a physical media release from MOD Archive, because I think it would be pretty, I think it would do really well. And I think it would be something that people could overall check out and maybe could grow a little niche following. So if you're looking for something free and mildly entertaining, The Deep Web Murder Show on Tubi now, and it's now a Tubi original. It is released by XYZ Films, which is kind of odd because I don't know if they made a deal with Tubi, but they've been releasing a couple of their movies. One was The Harbinger, which was a pretty cool, I guess, metaphor for COVID, sort of a Dr. Death kind of masked supernatural creeper kind of movie. They also released Hashtag Float, which I wasn't into, but there were some people that, especially that I've talked to, that are fans of the show that were like, it was serviceable. This one, I think maybe has been one of their, better releases, but they usually do release these movies in theaters. This one was not one that I saw in theater listings, but, if you're looking for it, check it out. Definitely recommend. Maybe a 6 out of 10 for me. All right. Man, I have just been talking nonstop. I like to keep these episodes a little short and sweet, but I watched a lot of movies. And I am going to talk about one that I recently watched because I was looking at the news and it did really well over the weekend. And it's Insidious, The Red Door. Now, if you are new to the Insidious world, I would say if you want to watch these in some sort of order, you could watch the first two and then The Red Door, because it is a direct sequel to the second movie, even though there is an element that it does not pick up, which I was a little disappointed with. And then really you could watch 4 and 5 as the prequel all on their own, understanding that the family, the Daltons, Dalton and the family is tied to the franchise overall in a way, as well as Elise, who is the psychic medium or whatever. This is the first movie in the franchise directed by Patrick Wilson. It was actually his first movie that he directed, and it killed at the box office. It killed Indiana Jones. So it took Indiana Jones out. And what's it about? Well, it's about Dalton's college dream soon becomes a living nightmare when the repressed demons of his past return. Pretty straight and dry. This is written by Scott Teams and Lee Whannell. Lee Whannell was the one that created the characters for this franchise. Obviously, James Wan is the one that directed the first two, and he produced all the others subsequently. It wasn't bad. It had some really serious moments. The acting was pretty decent. My one complaint about this movie is I don't know if it's supposed to be the real last of it. I know they're doing a spinoff of this franchise called Thread, I believe. I think that one is starring Mandy Moore. This particular end to the Insidious franchise and to the characters of this, I don't know if it maybe was the proper ending, because I do feel like the climax was a little too low-key for my taste. Everything kind of wraps up, but then you really should stay for the after credit nugget, I guess, there. But it wasn't bad. There were some really good jump scares, and Patrick Wilson does feel like a seasoned director. He certainly has been taking notes from, James Wan and being in the Conjuring universe and being in the Insidious franchise. And so I think it worked on a level. Entertaining popcorn mainstream horror movie. I think out of 10, I would probably give it like a 6 out of 10. Not my favorite, probably the lower tier of my favorites in the franchise. After rewatching the entire franchise with my better half, he seemed to think that, the first two are the best. And I do like the first two. I think the second one actually works better for me as a horror movie, as a fan of James Wan's style of directing and showcasing the villain in the second movie. And also Barbara Hershey's like the lead in that movie. So it's just a win-win for me. So I think if I was going to rank this franchise, it would probably be Insidious 2, Chapter 2. Then maybe Insidious 1, then Insidious 3, then 4, and then this one, 5. I joke a lot, and I love campy moments. And honestly, the fourth one really delivers on the camp and the hammy performances, especially by Lin Shaye. Like, she is just chewing those lines up and delivering a movie that she is not in. Like, the movie she's in is not the one you're watching, because her gravitas and the style of her acting in that movie is really, really good and dramatic, overly dramatic, in fact. And yeah, the plot's not really going anywhere. I do love the villain Keyface in that one. It almost actually was my second favorite of the franchise, to be honest, because it's just kind of wonky that he has keys for hands and he can like silence you by sticking that key inside you and kind of flipping you off. Or turning you off, I should say. It's kind of a weird concept. I don't know if it necessarily worked in the end. I do know that the campy, funny part at the end is when Elise's mom shows up and she does a Mortal Kombat high punch to Keyface. And he just like he's just shot up into the atmosphere, into the further. And he just like tiny little, you know, boop. And he just goes away. That for me sealed the deal. Like, part four is an entertaining piece of horror in its own right. You don't even have to watch anything else. Just watch that one. It's pretty fun and campy. Everything else kind of fits in line with seriousness. Like, the other movies are pretty serious. That one, for me, though, stands out as being campy. But Insidious: The Red Door, you know, check it out. Feel free to send me your franchise rankings if you would kindly do so. I'd be curious to see where you're at with things. So yeah, it's a fun up and down franchise. It definitely has its moments. I really dig The Further, and I wish that it was explored in a different way, and maybe even for the whole entire movie. Just plop somebody down there a la Silent Hill and let them explore The Further for the whole time, for the whole movie. I think that's what brings the most interesting element to these movies, regardless of the quality of each one. So recommend checking it out. Fun theater experience if you're looking for that summer popcorn horror movie flick. So I am done talking about movies. Whew. Lots of movies. You should go check them out. I'm looking forward to a lot of things coming out in July. Obviously, I'm looking forward to Talk to Me. I've heard that's an amazing horror movie from A24. I am kind of looking forward to that entry horror Haunted Mansion. I didn't like the Haunted Mansion from the 2000s, and I'm thinking this one looks more in line with better looking ghosts and ghouls. So I'm looking forward to that, oddly enough. And, you know, Cobweb is coming out, and that one looks amazing. That may be, you know, one of my higher anticipated movies after that trailer dropped. And speaking of trailers, Insidious: The Red Door had a ton of trailers. I mean, we got to see the ones I just mentioned. We also got to see the trailer for The Nun 2, which I know some of you out there weren't really fans of it. Some of you were. I was a big fan of The Nun. I thought that it was actually one of the better Conjuring Universe movies because it was, you know, kind of light, kind of like a Hammer movie and kind of campy. And I dig that out of a horror movie. So I'm looking forward to The Nun 2. The trailer looks okay. It looks a lot like what you would think The Nun 2 would look like, but I have hopes that the writer, Akilah Cooper, has inserted some of her campy, you know, jaw-drop moments that she's done so well with movies like Malignant, for example. So I hope that ends up working out. Now, I recently got to check out a pretty interesting book called The Chill, from Scott Carson. So what's The Chill about? Far upstate in New York's ancient forests, a drowned village lays beneath the dark, still waters of the Chilliwacke Reservoir. Early in the 20th century, the town was destroyed for the greater good, bringing water to the millions living downstate. Or at least that's what the politicians from Manhattan insisted at the time. The local families, settled there since America's founding, were forced from their land, but they didn't move far, and some didn't move at all. Now, a century later, the repercussions of human arrogance are finally making themselves known. An inspector assigned to oversee the dam, dangerously neglected for decades, witnesses something inexplicable. It turns out that more than the village was left behind in the waters of the Chill when it was abandoned. The townspeople didn't evacuate without a fight. A dark prophecy remained too, and the time has come for it to be fulfilled. Those who remember must ask themselves, who will be next? For sacrifices must be made. And as the dark waters begin to inexorably, I can't say that word, rise, the demand for a fresh sacrifice emerges from the deep. This, I thought, was going to be more Lovecraftian. It was not, but it did have that murky, watery, ghost, soggy, wet, New York upstate kind of feel to it. Oddly enough, not a lot happens, because there is a huge thing that happens in this movie, but it's weird because something happens at the beginning, and that, for the most part, over a couple of days, is what you're reading about. And it's a lot of day-to-day kind of weird investigative stuff. And then something happens, and then it's the end of the book. It doesn't feel like a long book. I think it's like 400 pages and like 430 pages, but you know, it was a breezy read. Not a lot of takeaway from it. And I still had some questions at the end of it. I'm not going to say it was something I want to highly recommend that you read. I would say that it's a fun beach read. So if you're at the beach, or, you know, if you're one of those readers that likes to just sit outside and read casually, this might be something, because the story is not complicated at all. And, you know, it was okay. I think it's like a 5 out of 10 for me. It's not something that I don't necessarily want to reread again. But if you are interested in that sort of, like I mentioned earlier, that soggy, wet, ghost kind of vibe, then I think you'll get something out of it. So that's what I read recently. And I just started a book as of last night by Ivy Tholen. And she is a writer that I've heard some really good about from some of my slasher friends in the horror community. It is called Tastes Like Candy, and it is a slasher novel right there in the subtitle. Everyone at Pritchett High wants an invitation to the senior scavenge in 2020. Whew, memories. Violet Warren and her friends are the lucky ones. 8 girls will break into the Poison Apple Carnival after hours for a scavenger hunt. Then at sunrise, they'll gather for a celebration in honor of their upcoming senior year. But someone else has another game planned. Isn't there always someone with another game planned in these slasher things? Minutes after the girls sneak into the carnival, a madman in a rubber mask begins slashing his way through the group, and Violet quickly realizes his motives are personal. As she watches her friends die in a series of increasingly bizarre attacks, she must fight to survive while trying to answer the question, what could she have done to earn a fast pass for a roller coaster ride straight to hell? This should be a movie. This is a fun book so far. I think I'm like 50 pages in, and I just kind of like started it and I just flew through. So it's not going to be a complicated read. I think it's only like maybe 300 or so pages. It's pretty breezy, and I was looking for something where I got immediate horror. And, you know, sometimes I'll read something like what I thought The Chill was going to be is a little more heady, a little more psychological. And I usually kind of will intersperse some slashy goods in there just to get that quick horror fix that I'm looking for. And this is fun so far. You get to read a lot of text messages between these group of girls at the beginning that actually they're quick. So it's not like you're reading these long excerpts, but they were kind of funny. And I think Ivy Tholen is a fun writer. If you haven't checked out any of her other books, definitely do. And that's all I have to recommend for horror reads for this episode. So as I bid you adieu, you know, let me know what you are excited for in terms of horror movies for the rest of the summer, or, you know, streaming, anything like that. There's a ton of shit coming out in physical media. My wish list is growing as we speak. As of this recording, Scream 6 will be out, so I'm going to be looking forward to picking that up at some point. Deadstream, which is coming out, one of my favorites of 2022. It's getting a really cool, obviously, DVD release, and it's getting a really cool steelbook release. So I'm looking forward to definitely picking that up. There is a couple Shudder movies. Leave is coming out, which I dig that. It was like a, it's a DVD that's coming out. There is A Spoonful of Sugar, which I probably won't pick that up, but I think for some of you fans out there, that psychological horror, I think you'll want to pick that one up for sure. Vinegar Syndrome, I just ordered some from their sale. I picked up Terror at 10 Killer, and I picked up Raw Nerve on sale, which is one that I kind of like. It's like cop procedural, little bit light slasher element to it. I also picked up Demon Rat, which is one of my favorite Mexican directors who directed Cemetery of Terror. Well, Vinegar Syndrome is releasing Demon Rat, which I have not seen. So this is a blind buy for me. So I'm pretty stoked for that. And, you know, some of the things that are coming out, you know, later in the year, I know Vinegar Syndrome dropped Beaks, which I think is supposed to come out in August. Scream Factory has released a lot of 4Ks, which I'm kind of a little disappointed that they're, most of their releases now seem to be 4K re-releases of stuff that just got Blu-rays. But for you that like to upgrade your Blu-rays or never bought the Blu-ray to begin with, My Bloody Valentine has a nice package that they're releasing with, I think it's like a box of candy hearts, which isn't candy in it, but it has like goodies in there, pens and like some steels and so forth, which is getting a 4K upgrade. Motel Hell just got a 4K upgrade. A lot of the slashers that they released are getting that 4K upgrade. They 4K upgrade The Haunting, which I'm not sure why, but they did. And World War Z, I think they're doing as well for that upgrade. What else? Oh, and obviously there's a ton of books that are coming out. Some that, you know, are on my wish list right now that I am super stoked to get. And also just the magazines in general. I just picked up Horror Hound 97, which is quite late. This is March, April, and I just picked it up and was available in June. So it has a cool kick-ass Hellraiser retrospective in it. So I think you should check that out. That's the reason why I picked this up, because you're going to get a lot of old news from Renfield, Evil Dead Rise, which are in this. But the Hellraiser retrospective and the Dead by Daylight. If you are not playing Dead by Daylight, Nicolas Cage is actually coming to the game. And Horror Hound did a really good job of giving you a short overview of how to play and what to look for in it. So if you're looking for that sort of thing, you know, check out that Horror Hound 97 that's currently out now. And that's it for this episode, loaded with stuff. Let me know what you are watching, what you're looking forward to, what you're picking up these days. And as always, you can reach me at Fatal Follower Presents, a podcast on Facebook, Horror Amino, and you can reach out to me at fatalfollowerpresents@gmail.com. Stay safe and stay spooky, and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.